Welcome to Comadres y Comics. This is Las Pláticas, episode number 5.0. And we have a guest in-house. We first met this dude at Comic-Con Revolutions and then saw him again at East LA Cape. Today we're joined by writer Gabe Cheng, creator and author of For Molly, a comic that got its start in a peculiar way. The first issue, or chapter one, was kickstarted quite successfully. This story has had a myriad of evolutions, and here to tell us more about it, to tell us more about For Molly and the issue two Kickstarter is Gabe Cheng. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
Yay.
I'm very excited to be here.
Yay, yes, we met him originally at Comic-Con Revolution, San Bernardino? No.
Ontario.
Riverside,
Ontario. Yeah.
There you go. So, after I passed a certain, landmarker going east, it's all the same to me.
It's all Inland Empire.
Yeah.
I went to school at UC Riverside, so I can say that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all Inland Empire at a certain point.
There you go. So yes, we met him first there, and then, it was a really awesome surprise that we saw you again at East LA Cape. And, from that second meeting, we set up this interview. So thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad to be here. And it's great that we were able to connect at East LA Cape, because that was a last minute addition for me, because the Ontario Comic Con was great and there was great promoters and all things like that. But it wasn't as many people there as I had hoped. I was hoping for kind of a better turnout.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so East LA Cape was like, oh, I got to try to do one more Comic-Con, even if it's a small one, while this Kickstarter is going on, so I can kind of get the word out a little bit more about the Kickstarter.
Oh.
So I was last minute, got in there because somebody else dropped out, so it was a really good experience.
Oh, that's great. Well, all the better for us to have met you again and to set up this interview. So in order for us to get this started, we'd love to have you introduce yourself to our listeners by describing your entry into the into comics and how that led you to For Molly, and then tell us just briefly all about For Molly.
Well, that's a lot. I have been really, really deep into comics since college. That's when I kind of got into it more. I read them a little bit as a kid, but not a lot. I was more into like movies and old TV shows. Like I was a Nick at Night kid.
Oh yeah.
So I watched a lot of like Get Smart and All in the Family and MASH and all these old TV shows. I was way more into that as a kid than I was into comics. So yeah, comics is a pretty recent thing for me. I got out of college in 2008, and that was about the time that I started reading them. And I've always loved it as an art form, as this form of storytelling. And when I wrote this story for Molly, I was going through kind of a difficult time in my life, and I was trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to, you know, take what I love to do. You know, I love writing and kind of produce something out of it. And it kind of just, I was having a conversation with my brother, and I had the whole script written out for For Molly, and I'm sorry, I'm like bouncing all over the place.
No problem.
It's okay.
I had the whole script written out for For Molly. It was a very cathartic thing that I did writing this script. Like I said, it was going through kind of a difficult time in my life, and instead of just kind of letting it sit on a shelf or go around and trying to pitch it as a movie, which I didn't have any connections in order to do that, so I thought that would be kind of a very, very difficult uphill climb. I just thought, like, you know, what if I turned it into a graphic novel? And that's kind of where this came in. And it's just been an incredible experience since then. I mean, I don't know if I'd answered your first question, but I mean, I can keep talking about like, the whole story from the beginning.
Well, no, you definitely talked about how you started, when you started reading comics and, how that kind of, your conversation with your brother kind of led you to making it into a graphic novel. But why don't you tell us, actually, what is For Molly about? What is your quick little synopsis of what this comic is about?
It's about an antisocial talking dog named Molly who helps a recently divorced New Yorker named Greg rescue his sister from an evil that lurks in the New Jersey forest. Yeah, so that's the elevator pitch, the one-sentence log line for Molly. And chapter one is introducing Greg, introducing his situation, where he kind of is in this very sad and lonely time in his life, and then suddenly he has this adventure thrust upon him when he's attacked while he's house-sitting for his sister in New Jersey. He's attacked by a man in a mask, and as he's running away, he encounters a talking dog named Molly who says, you know, you have to follow me right now, and he's shocked that this dog has started talking to him. He's never met a talking dog before, and so in that time where he is shocked and kind of stunned, the attacker kind of comes up on him and knocks him out and kidnaps him, and that's kind of where the story starts.
And craziness ensues.
and the adventure ensues. So, but I've always, I grew up in New Jersey. I came out to California for college, and I've been here since then. And I've wanted to set a comic in the forests of New Jersey because it's such an interesting visual place where it's very densely forested. There's a lot of really cool colors, especially in the winter and the fall, or when it's transitioning from fall to winter, and there's a lot of abandoned things. And this is, you'll see this a lot in the Northeast and a lot of different places, like where there's, you know, there's, it's very spread out as far as where people live. I just love the visuals of like abandoned houses and abandoned train tracks and abandoned train yards and factories and bridges and aqueducts and things like that. So that, became the setting for the story, and it fits perfectly because the story is about feeling abandoned and feeling guilt over abandoning people, and so those two things kind of mingle together as one of the major themes of the story. So, and yeah, so it all came together really well kind of in my mind, and I'm just really glad to be bringing it to this visual medium that I just really love so much.
Mm-hmm. So we had been talking a bit earlier because we read your comic, and we were kind of talking about what kind of genre it is. And so I'm very curious as to what you would classify it, because we were talking about, like, is it like, it's a bit like magical realism, but also a little sci-fi. So what would you classify it as?
I like to say modern fantasy. Okay. But I guess magical realism is probably a good way to describe it too. I was really inspired by Neverwhere, which is a novel by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yes, we're all very familiar with it.
So let
go ahead.
This is Sarah, and let me tell you, thank you for letting us read your first issue, but as soon as I peered at the very first page and it had a quote by Neil Gaiman, I screenshot it and I sent it to the girls. I'm like, I think I'm gonna love this.
Yes, Sarah is our resident Sandman aficionado and lover, and she is just such a huge fan of Sandman. So yeah, you had her from the beginning.
That's nice. I love that story. That was from the Dream Hunters,
right?
And the story of the fox and the monk, and it's just such an incredible just story about stories, and just such an incredible mythology. I have a Sandman tattoo on my back. Yeah, it's a dedication to my siblings where it says, I stand in my gallery and I hold your sigil.
I need to see that.
I don't understand how that tattoo didn't come into your description about your entry into college.
Well, there's just
should have led with that.
Sorry. Neverwhere is such a huge inspiration or source of inspiration for this comic, where it Neverwhere, for those of your listeners that don't know, is about kind of a 30,000 foot view of it, about a guy who is kind of unsatisfied with his life. He's not sure why, and he enters into this hidden world that had been right under his nose in the underground of London, in the tunnels under London, this whole time that he had been living there, and he had been completely unaware of it. So it's a magical world, you know, where time and space and reality all bend in different ways. Now, there's not so much of that in my story, but there is that element of, like, there's a hidden world, there's hidden societies in the New Jersey forest, and part of that is this sudden realization that dogs are able to talk, and not just these particular dogs that are in New Jersey, but all dogs, because
he asked the dogs, like, I've never met a talking dog before, and the dog responds they just didn't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of that line. Thank
yes,
you.
Thank
you. Yeah. And that is actually what made me to believe that it was more magical realism, because magical realism, what separates it from fantasy is just I met a talking dog, and you know, sometimes that happens,
yeah.
but But that falls in the wayside of this dude trying to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have time to worry about that stuff when you're getting chased by a guy with a sword.
Yeah.
So.
With a sword. And then he pulls out the gun, which I found really funny.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
He's just like a guy with a sword, and then he pulls out the gun. I was just like, no, you gotta go for style points first. Like, let's do the sword first.
Well, I got the impression that he wanted to do it silently. And then, you know,
he just put a silencer on the gun. Well, that just that just distributes the noise. Don't ask me how I know this, but like it doesn't really silence it, so you can't really tell where the bullet shot came from. But it's still like kind of, it does still kind of do it.
Jen, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I think
if
that
I
the
ever
silencer
heard
is like. I think the silencer is kind of made up for movies where it's not actually silent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not 100% the reason why he's using the sword instead of the gun. But Ed,
we'll find out.
Yeah. But also, I just love the imagery of having the sword, and it's just such a strange thing that kind of shocks me, or at least out of something like, oh, that's so intriguing. Why is he using a sword? And so not in the second chapter, but in chapter three, there's going to be a big sword fight in there. So
nice.
So there's a reason why he has it, even if it only makes sense to me and all my readers are like, why?
So of course we did read the first issue, and in there you had quite an extensive foreword kind of explaining the process that you went through and all the different iterations that the story has gone through, beginning as a screenplay and submitting them to contests, and your passion for this story is totally undeniable that you've stuck with it, and I definitely got the feeling that it was just something that you just could not let go. So can you tell us a little bit about what your actual personal connection to this story is and how that has driven you to just not give up on it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was trying to get that out in my ramblings earlier, so sorry about that.
It's fine.
This story is very personal to me. It is, who the character is and me saying there's a difficult time in my life, I was writing it while I was going through my divorce. And it is about the character of Molly is the visuals of it. She is based on the character, the dog that I lost custody of in the divorce. So.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness.
Oh my gosh.
I feel
No. It's just part of life. But so there's a connection that I lost, and this is a story about me wanting to go on an adventure with that dog again, and that's one of the main reasons why I've held on so fiercely to the story and vehemently want to tell the story.
That is so touching, and I'm like truly on the verge of tears. I mean,
and the other thing. Yeah, but there's another part to it too, where it's that I used to be a high school teacher, and this didn't come up in the foreword, so maybe I need to put it in the afterword of chapter two. But I used to be a high school teacher, and I made a lot of connections with a lot of really great students, a lot of really rewarding connections with a lot of really great students that I am still in touch with, even though I'm no longer teaching. And one of them in particular, in my last year of teaching, I had a really close mentor, student, coach and athlete, kind of relationship to, and so the personality of Molly is based on that student. And cause she was kind of antisocial, kind of rough around the edges, the kind of person that really put her guard up around a lot of people. Uh-huh. But, you know, when the walls came down and when you break through those borders, I found somebody who I just felt a connectedness too in a lot of important ways. So, and like I said, I'm still in contact with her, and actually I'm actually going to her graduation on Monday.
That's awesome.
Very happy for her. Yeah. And so that connection to that student and that experience I had of being a mentor, and a coach and a teacher for those years is also, is what makes this story very, very personal for me.
Oh my goodness. Like literally I read the first issue, and now just hearing the story behind the story, it now is just like taken on a whole nother level of meaning to me as well.
Well, this is
Sarah. Well, thank you.
I loved it. I mean, seeing the dog and seeing this cute little face and, just reminds me of my dog. So you had me at hello. I mean, Neil Gaiman dogs, I mean, it's perfect for me.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, this is a story that is relatable for a lot of people that have animals. I think that people that have pets, you know, everybody has this connection to their pets that sometimes transcends language a little bit. Like, yes, people talk to their dogs and people talk to their cats, but they can't talk back. But even though they can't talk back, there's still this empathic connection between, mm-hmm. you know, pets and owners, or pets and companions, however you want to kind of name it.
Right.
And I'm hoping to tap into that in the story.
So I have a quick question, and you touched upon it when you're forward, for the comic, but when exactly did you write the screenplay for this comic? Like, what was around, like, what year?
It was a couple years ago. It was in 2016.
2016. Oh, so not that long ago. Because in your forward, you talked about how you did pitch it to, like, studios and, like, movies and TV shows, because screenplays are kind of the to-be of it, of stuff.
It's something like, else, of yeah. a movie uh-huh. or a show.
Of a movie or a TV show and stuff like that. So, do you think if you pitched it now, like it's been 3 years of it, yeah, 2016, 3 years, do you think it would be, like, possible to that it would be picked up, like, by sci-fi or something like that? Because there has been, even within those 3 years, a kind of shift towards in pop culture towards more like more sci-fi, more yeah. fantasy. Like, it's like,
thank you, Stranger Things.
So what yeah. do you think?
Well, I didn't pitch it anywhere. I submitted it to contests, and I submitted it as part of my application to the USC and UCLA screenwriting program, the master screenwriting program. But I didn't end up pitching anywhere because I didn't really even know where to start as far as getting those pitch meetings. But, you know, my focus is definitely to get the comic done. It's four chapters. Chapter two is the Kickstarter's going out right now, like you guys said. My focus is definitely just getting it done in its current form and making it the best comic book that it can be. Because it started out as a screenplay, and, you know, a lot of people say, you know, that you shouldn't necessarily just do comics just because, you know, because it's not going to be a movie. And I definitely considered that, and I went through this whole rewrite process where I'm adapting the screenplay into the comic book form and working with my artist to really figure out, you know, what's going to be the best way to visually tell this story, the way that you can only tell it as a comic book. So I'm really focusing on, like, making the best comic possible. I mean, would I like to see it as a TV show down the line? Like, absolutely, like 100%. Yes, and I think that, you know, I would love to have this story really just in any medium, as long as I was able to share it, because it's a really important story to me. But right now I'm just trying to focus on making the best comic book that I can make.
So this is Kristen, and you mentioned your Kickstarter, and we've kind of thrown it around in a couple of the questions, but I want to give you the opportunity to actually share a little bit more about the Kickstarter for Molly. It's for issue two, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. So for issue two, it's already live. So how's the progress so far, and can you maybe entice our listeners with some of the awesome, unique rewards that the backers will receive if they back your Kickstarter?
The Kickstarter is going really, really well. As of today, which is June 6th, we have 22 days left. It's ending on Friday, June 28th. I'm at 71%, I believe.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm really, really happy. We've had a really great start. Really excited, really grateful, just extremely grateful to everybody that has given so far. Well, the first thing is that, the number one reward that I'm most excited about is, of course, the comic, and this is the first time that I'm going to be putting it in print, because before this, it was a webcomic. I originally started out putting it onto my website, where you can read chapter one for free, and it's on the webcomic apps and sites like that, but But now I've decided that, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to go into print comics. And so it's available for the first time in print, which I'm very, very excited about. So a $10 pledge will get somebody the digital comic and the print comic. And it's not just chapter two, but it's chapter one and two together.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm going to do a double stuffed, collected edition of chapter one and two together in one 64 page, floppy book. So I'm really excited about that.
I have a question. Is there an option once they, people contribute to get their issues, is there an option to get them signed by you?
Yeah, I'm actually going to, I'm going to sign them all. So
I
don't know if I included that in my Kickstarter. I probably should have, but yeah, I will get them all and I'll sign them all.
Sweet.
Yeah. And then, some other things I'm offering, I have a sticker of Molly and Greg done by an incredible artist named Janet Kim. I have a magnet of Molly and Greg, which is the variant cover of Chapter 2, which is done by another incredible artist named Linda Chung. I have a tote bag, which is has another variant cover done by another incredible artist named Isabella Chang, who's actually my sister. So I got her artwork into the Kickstarter as well. And in the higher tiers, in the 100 tier and the $135 tier, there's custom pet portraits.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm really, really excited about this. And there's still a lot of these left, actually. I'm looking at it right now. When this is all done, you send in your photo of your pet, whether it's a cat, a dog, or a bird, or whatever. And then my friend, Linda Chung, the artist who did the magnets, will do either a black and white, ink drawing of that of your pet, or she'll do a full watercolor painting of
it. Oh my
gosh! She's an incredible artist. Wow. Yeah, she's an incredible artist. She works for DreamWorks as a background animator. There's an example of her little watercolor drawing of or watercolor painting of Molly and an ink drawing on the campaign site. So you can see how amazing her artwork is, and so hopefully people will get excited about that.
I'm excited about it. Yeah, I love watercolor. Yeah. So amazing. I don't have a pet, and I'm sad about that right now.
I have a cat, so if I can ever make him stand still for a photo, maybe.
Yeah, that might be the challenge, especially with cats.
That's funny.
So does this mean you're just a cat, a dog person, or are you just animal person?
I'm mostly a dog person. I don't have a dog at the moment because my apartment doesn't allow it, unfortunately. And also because I kind of work a lot, so I wouldn't want to have an animal here just kind of waiting around for me to get home. I don't think that's necessarily fair to the pet. You know, I want to get into a position where I'm able to spend a lot of time with the pet before I get one. So, but yeah, mostly I'm a dog person. I'm not sure that I would get a cat. But I've never had a cat, so.
My heart breaks.
will we be seeing talking cats in the future?
To be determined, because I'm kind of making changes as I go along.
Okay.
Based on kind of how things end up looking in the comic and kind of the flow of it. At the moment, no, but I have been kind of thinking in my head like, oh, you know, what would it be like for that stray cat in the New Jersey forest, you know? you know, they wouldn't necessarily be running in a pack, you know, they'd definitely be alone, and, you know, Molly is kind of alone, and you'll see in Chapter 2 the pack that she once was running with but now is no longer running with, so.
Oh, okay.
Mysterious.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But, so yeah, I've given it a little bit of thought, but I haven't set into motion a plan where there will be other animals that are talking in the forest.
So speaking of artists, how did you meet your artist, and what about his style was it that you liked that you went with him? Because we love it.
Yes.
Absolutely love the colors and
the
artwork.
And the first scenes were amazing.
Very good.
Yeah.
And I really liked how he draws Molly too, and how he draws her like leaping and jumping.
Yes.
It's very visual.
And some of the panel transitions were freaking amazing. Just so creative. I really love when artists get creative with transitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben is really amazing. His name is Benjamin Sawyer. His Social media is all at Sketch Sawyer. So, you know, I encourage all of your listeners to follow him. He's just, he is an amazing, amazing artist. We met on Upwork, the freelancer website. I put up an ad on Upwork saying I need an artist for a comic that I'm doing, and I put a description of the comic, and he was one of the people that that applied and got back to me. And what I just took a look at his art, and I was like, yes, for sure, I want to get this guy. And so, and we've been working together ever since. We have a really great relationship. We've only talked on the phone like I think 3 times total. Everything else is entirely through email. So we have a really good kind of communication going back and forth, open line of communication going back and forth between the two of us. And he lives in St. Louis, Missouri, and I live in Los Angeles. So we've never met in person either. But, you know, despite that, we're having like a really great collaboration.
That's awesome. Comadre Comics is a podcast that highlights the female and Latinx presence in the comic book industry as creators, characters, and fans. And so we talk a lot about the cultural impact of being Latinx in comic books. How do you define your cultural identity, and how does this definition, if it does at all, drive your creativity?
I am half Chinese and half Italian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I am,
the food Asian in American your household.
And white. Yes, that's definitely true. I have been wrestling with this question a lot because I wrote a blog post about this a while ago, and it got published on ASAM News, which is an Asian American blog.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I originally wrote for Molly, in my description of Greg, I put white guy, blonde hair. And I got through the first like 50 pages like that with Greg. And then I showed it to a friend of mine. And the first thing that she said after she read it was, why isn't he Asian?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have an answer for it. And so that kind of threw me into kind of a questioning and I wouldn't say identity crisis, but definitely I've been reflecting on my identity as an Asian American writer since then, and kind of trying to figure out what my role is and how do I bring my story and my perspective on being an Asian American and being half white too, into the comic. And part of that is making Greg and making his sisters half Asian. So that's why, I was very particular about the way that he looks and the way that his sisters Iris and Ava look as well, because I want them to look kind of like me and also kind of like my sisters and my cousins that are also half Asian.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it is something that I'm kind of discovering as I'm going and trying to figure out, you know, what does it mean and what does it mean to represent Asian Americans? And, you know, I'm still trying to figure that out. I honestly don't have a great answer for it, because I'm also trying to kind of discover my own culture as well, where I also wrote another blog post for ASAM News about how when we were kids, I was never sent to Chinese school, to the Chinese Saturday school, where you learn about the culture and things like that. So now recently, because my parents didn't want to force a lot of the culture on us, they only kind of gave us a little bit of it at home, but they didn't want to force it to us through the Saturday schools. I'm now trying to discover it on my own, and doing the comic has been one of those ways where I'm trying to figure out what my kind of cultural identity is, you know, now that I'm in my early 30s.
Yeah. I actually think that your story and how you're describing, really kind of doing some introspection about your cultural identity parallels a lot of some of the stories that we hear from Latinx creators as well, where as immigrants, sometimes, when we have, parents who, speak differently or act differently, or we are eating different food, we just wanna, as children, assimilate, and so we kind of try to like hide it or like just reject it. And it's not until we get older that we were like, hey, this is important. This is something that it makes me who I am, and we don't really, as children, fully understand the importance of, I think, cultural identity. So I think your story actually would probably resonate with a lot of people of a lot of different cultures.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's something that kind of we all go through. And I saw this when I was a teacher too, where you don't realize that that you have a unique story because you're busy living it.
Right.
So I never really thought about like, oh, maybe my perspective on being Asian American, my personal story about being, growing up in a mixed household, like that might be interesting to other people. Like I never thought about that. I never thought of it as being exceptionally unique. I thought I was just kind of regular, kind of blended with the crowd, but no, that's not necessarily the case. Everybody has their own story. Mm-hmm. Everybody has mm-hmm. a different family. Yes, there are some cultural things that we all share, but that's that is what I've been discovering is how do I give voice to and how do I get it into these stories, my own unique perspective, you know, not just on the culture aspects of it, but just my life in general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing you mentioned. It seems to be that, especially in like comics and writing and even like most creative things, the default seems to be white man.
Mm-hmm.
Foremost, if you don't put a description, and especially in like screenplays and stuff like that, of how a character looks like, or in books and stuff like that, of how they look like, most people tend to default to it being someone white. So even when stuff, this is why I really like comics, is that you get a choice in depicting how this person looks like. And even if it's something as simple as like, I want them to look like me.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a world of difference to somebody. Cause we have seen it, in conventions and places like that where kids see a book and then they're like, that person looks like me, so I want that book.
Mm-hmm.
It's even something as simple as that can do a world of difference.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that's why I was, I didn't want Greg to look exactly like me. Mm-hmm. But it was important that he looked half Asian. Like, that was very important to me.
So I think that we mentioned to you that part of our Komalasi Comics podcast, we have some regular segments that we also like to do on our Las Platicas. And one of them is on my radar. We talk about maybe some books or TV shows or movies that we've recently seen or heard of that are super interesting to us or we're excited about. So we wanted to ask you, Gabe Chang, what is on your radar?
Oh, so much. I recently discovered that through the Los Angeles Public Library, if you have a library card, you can download an app called Hoopla.
Yep.
Which, I bought an Amazon Fire tablet, and I downloaded the app Hoopla on there, and I put in my library card number. And in Hoopla, you have access to almost every single trade paperback from DC and from Image, which mm-hmm. are the two main comics that I read. I do read a little bit of Marvel, but Marvel, for whatever reason, doesn't have a lot of their trade paperbacks on Hoopla. I guess they haven't set up a deal with them yet.
Darn Disney.
So I have done, who knows, maybe they're coming out with their own,
I'm sure.
Comic reader app. It would not surprise me.
Right.
So I have been doing a deep dive into some Image stuff. And so I don't know if I'm bringing up ones that all the listeners are going to know about, but the ones that I've really hooked onto are Redneck by Donny Cates
with
Andre Theron,
uh-huh.
which I absolutely love. It's about vampires living in the American South, and it's kind of like a dark, dirty Western that also has vampires in it.
Yes.
And I think it's just so cool.
Redneck is a lot of fun.
Who's the writer again? Donny Cates. Yeah. I read 3 issues before I realized the double meaning of the title, Redneck. I was like, oh my gosh. Redneck? Vampires? Redneck? Dirty South? Oh my gosh.
And, that is hilarious.
I laughed for a long time at myself about that.
Oh, it's just such a great book, and it's so I love Westerns, and I love like modern Westerns, and that's absolutely what it is, because it's this meditation, because the main character is this older vampire who's kind of the black sheep of his family. He's the one that is kind of in a position where he is of the older generation, where he's got younger people, but they don't really listen to him. And he's not the main patriarch, who is his quote unquote brother, DJ. It's like the Western genre in general is just such an interesting meditation on masculinity. And to see that, from the perspective of, the modern vampire is so cool in this story.
I love me some vampire stories. And yeah, this is definitely a different, interesting take on that.
Yeah, absolutely. The other Image comic that I'm reading is Oblivion Song.
Oh, okay.
From Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo DeFelici.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a really great one. I'm reading a Dark Horse comic, which I think is like incredibly popular. So again, I'm sorry if like all the, your listeners already know about this stuff, but Black Hammer by Jeff Lemire and Dean Ormstrom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Also, one of my best friends turned me on to a comic called Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction.
Oh, Sex
Criminals,
so awesome.
Sex Criminals,
oh,
a lot
so good.
Of fun.
I downloaded the trade paperbacks on Hoopla, and like I thought that like, you know, I'll probably like it. You know, it's supposed to be very tongue in cheek. And then I read all of it, and like I just totally binged it. I read all of it in like 3 days, and it's a lot. There's like 30 issues or something, but it is just so amazing hilarious and touching and beautiful and innovative. There's just so many great things about Sex Criminals.
And it has a lot of dick jokes.
Yes, it's just full of double entendres.
Yes, it is.
And the further you get into it, the there's some that are just like, they're so lazy where it's like, there's like a bunch of signs in the background of one, and one of them is just like buy and get out, like get your stuff and get out of here, like that's the name of the store or something. And there's just more and more like that, and then there's more that are like sex jokes and it's so funny.
Some of my favorite parts of Sex Criminals is just the background art that Chip Zdarsky just includes so many like little like Easter eggs for the reader. It's so awesome. Like I spent so much time just looking at the art, because it was just like he together they're an amazing pair. But I just really, really like the humor that the story shows in the art.
Yeah, it comes at you from all angles.
It does.
It's an attack on the senses. It's like you have to pay so close attention to it, but when you do, it is so rewarding.
Absolutely. Well, those are all amazing books. I started reading Oblivion Song, but I never continued on with it. I might have to go back, but I think you definitely, we haven't spoken about most of those books to our readers, I don't think, our listeners, I mean. So hopefully it'll turn some people on. And yeah, Hoopla in and of itself is an amazing resource. If all you need is a library card, and you can go on to your, I don't know if all, I know Santa Monica Library and probably the main Los Angeles Public Library, has access to that, but, you, like Gabe said, have access for free to tons of trade paperbacks. So it's an amazing way to get into comic book reading.
It absolutely is, yeah.
We also have another segment on our podcast called Chisme de la Semana, where you spill the tea. You give us some juicy gossip. So what Chisme de la Semana do you have for us today?
Oh, I don't have. I was really racking my brain. What good gossip do I have? I really don't have any good gossip. Yeah, I...
It could be gossip for your book or for any projects you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Or anything that you saw in like a, I guess, nerd news or whatever.
Yeah. Is there any chisme, any gossip about any projects that you might be tumbling around in your brain for after For Molly?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can talk about that. I was, and this actually has to do with the Ontario Comic Con that we met at.
Uh-huh.
So I got some advice from a writer who is there. And he said, you know, one of the things that he wished that he had done early on was not do Kickstarters for big, multi-part, long books, which is, you know, exactly what I'm doing, unfortunately. he said that, like, one of the things that would have been good to build up a following is to do, instead of doing big Kickstarters for big books, do, you know, and one of those, do a lot of small Kickstarters for small books.
Okay.
So... do a one-shot, like a 16-page comic, and then do a Kickstarter for, I don't know, like a couple thousand dollars, maybe a maximum $2,000, maybe $1,500, and just get stuff out there and get it out there quickly and build a following and build things up that way. So I heard that advice. I walked back to my table where I was exhibiting, and I was exhibiting with my friend Linda, who is the artist that is contributing to the Kickstarter, and said, Linda, we got to do a one shot together. And she's like, yes, let's do it.
Awesome.
So we are figuring something out. to work on together. We're going to try to do a little 16-page, maybe at maximum, maybe 12 to 16-page story that we can do a Kickstarter for, get both of our names out there, get more of our work out there, and kind of advance our passions, as it were. So yeah, that's something that I'm thinking about. I don't want to reveal too much about what we talked about after that, as far as like what the story is going to be about.
Uh-huh.
But as far as like what am I doing, I'm going to try to do that in the interim between For Molly Chapter 2 and For Molly Chapter 3, which is I'm hopefully going to launch the Kickstarter for that at the beginning of the calendar year, because I tried to do a Kickstarter at the end of the year the last time, and it was not successful. And so I've learned my lesson about doing a Kickstarter right in the middle of the holidays. That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
So, so the Kickstarter for For Molly Chapter 3 will be going on in the beginning of 2020.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
That's good cheese, man. There you go. You got the hang of it.
So, Gabe, is there anything that you want us to know about For Molly or about the Kickstarter or anything that you think will really just motivate our listeners to get out there and back your book?
I mean, I think we've covered it all. This is a story that I am very passionate about. It's very important to me. It's very personal to me, but I think that a lot of people can relate to it. It's about guilt. It's about abandonment. It's about loyalty and trust and what happens when those things are broken. And starting in that place, because I just named a lot of pretty negative things or pretty kind of downer things, starting from that place, meeting somebody who is in a similar situation, realizing that you have to work together to survive in this crazy environment where there's packs of feral talking dogs, and there's crazy cultists who believe in magic, and there's, you know, people living off the grid with their families, and people running around with swords and bow and arrows and getting into fights and things like that. Like, there's all this other great adventure stuff in For Molly, but really it's about these two characters that at the beginning of the story, they're missing something in their lives. And when they meet each other, they butt heads, but by the end of it, they realize that they needed each other. And this is what was missing in their lives. So that's what the story of For Molly is about, and that's why I'm so excited to tell it. And chapter two is really, like I said, chapter one is really about meeting Greg and kind of what his situation is. Chapter two is really about meeting Molly and who is she and what has her recent history been about, and, you know, when she is pressed, how will she react and that kind of thing. So I'm just really excited about chapter two, and I'm really excited to tell this story. And you know, we briefly mentioned him, but I really cannot say enough about Ben and how he is just an incredible artist. He is an incredible collaborator. I've learned so much about layout and panel flow and just the medium of comic book storytelling in general from him. His backgrounds are amazing. His action is amazing. Like, his character work is so great, and the way that he positions the quote unquote camera to show these interesting angles on people, and I'm so lucky to be working with Ben, and even if it's just to get his art out there and to get him more known, like, that's reason enough to read the book too.
Nice. You mentioned a lot For Molly. That's a question I had, like, why this title, For Molly?
I didn't realize that until I had finished chapter one, is that I never actually say that the dog's name is Molly. It's a story. So yeah, it is. It ties into kind of the theme that comes up, which is that some things are worth fighting for. And that's going to be an important part of the story moving forward, is that, you know, what is it that is worth fighting for? For right now, for Greg, it's his sisters, because we see them in the beginning and how they are kind of his support system when he's going through this difficult time. And they're the reason why he rushes into the forest with this dog that he doesn't know. You know, what is worth fighting for? And so the title is kind of a little bit of an allusion to that, and a little bit of an indication as far as that. So yeah, that's what it's about.
Awesome.
Well, you definitely sold me, 3, 4, 5 times over with all of your descriptions of everything that readers are going to get in this book, all the excitement, all the mystery, all the amazing talking animals. I'm really happy that this before Molly caught my eye when I was walking by your table at Comic-Con Revolution. So we want you to let our listeners know how they can find you. How can they find your project? How can they find future projects? Where can we find you on social media, websites, all the good stuff?
I'm on social media at Gabe Chang Comics. That's me on Instagram and Twitter at Gabe Chang Comics, and Chang, C-H-E as in Echo N-G, which I always have to tell everybody. Even when I was still a high school teacher and I had like big posters on the wall of my name, Mr. Chang, C-H-E as in Echo N-G, I would still get papers turned in with C-H-A-N-G. It's like, what do I have to do to spell my name right? So, at Gabe Chang Comics, it's at For Molly Comic on Facebook, and it is formollycomic.com, which is a website where, like I said, you can read Chapter 1 online for free. It doesn't have all the additional stuff that the PDF that I sent you has and that the paper version of the comic is going to have, but it does have the main story in there. And then links to the Kickstarter, which, again, is going on right now, ends on June 28th, which is a Friday. Links to the Kickstarter available on all those different places.
Excellent. That's really great. Thank you so much for sharing all that with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I read the book, but I learned so much more about it, and I'm super excited to read chapter 2, issue 2, and I wish you all the luck in the world see the completion of this entire story that you want to tell.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. I really appreciate your support and having me on, and I really hope that I really hope that we can continue to collaborate when at the nearest best opportunity.
Absolutely.
For sure.
All right, guys. Well, that was our Las Platicas 5.0. Thank you so much for joining us. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.